Hey everybody, it is Caesarean Awareness Month, and I am so stinking excited to share with you a promo code that was given from Dr. Elliot Berlin. If you haven't already, head over to episode 254 and check out our episode with him talking about prenatal focused chiropractic care and so much more. He has offered us 1 month free on a monthly subscription for the month of April. You can go check it out at informedpregnancy.tv and enter code VBACLINK424. That is VBACLINK424. There are so many incredible things in this Informed Pregnancy Plus network that you will not want to miss out on. Check out the link in the show notes and again, redeem that code with VBACLINK424. On to today's show. Hello, hello, women of strength. You guys, I am excited for today's episode. I love talking about VBAC, obviously, but specifically, we're going to talk a little bit about unmedicated versus medicated. So our friend Haley from North Carolina has had a beautiful unmedicated hospital VBAC. So I want to also talk about the opposite side of that and talk about medicated VBAC. We have so many people in our community that I see type, I want a VBAC, but I don't want to go unmedicated. And my doctor says, I have to, I can't have an epidural. Or the total flip side of that, where I really want an unmedicated VBAC, but my doctor says, I can't go unmedicated. I have to have the epidural. Did I just say that correctly, Haley? Like, it's yeah. Either one or the other. Yeah. We've got providers telling people they can't have an epidural or they have to have an epidural. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit today before we get going on those two topics, right? Mm. Well, first of all, let's talk about unmedicated birth. Haley and myself are living proof today. We're on this episode. That unmedicated VBAC is 100% possible, achievable, and safe, right? Because a lot of those providers that come out and say that they can't go unmedicated is because they say it's not safe. Because in the rare chance, which we know uterine rupture happens, but it is rare, in the rare chance of a uterine rupture, that is where they say, like, it's not okay, right? Or they'll say things like, but, you know, you wouldn't want to be knocked out for your birth, which is scary. I don't want to be knocked out for my birth. And I know people have. And in a lot of the times, it's not the most pleasant experience, right? So, yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that. Unmedicated vaginal birth is unmedicated vaginal birth. that's what it is. I mean, just laying it out there. Yes, we have a slight increase of uterine rupture. Yes. What happens if we have a uterine rupture and we are unmedicated? A lot of the times we're noticing that there's signs of uterine rupture. We get an epidural or a spinal and we go back and we have a C-section. Simple as that. Or if it is a true medical emergency, yes, there is that small risk of needing to be put under. So a small risk and a small risk equal risk, of course, but it's low. So what about if we have the just-in-case epidural? I seriously just want to sometimes, like, stalk someone that says the just-in-case. We don't need to be placing an epidural just to have it ready to dose, because guess what? If in the event that it is a true emergency and we really do need to go in for an immediate cesarean, it's the same thing. We get knocked out. Like, and I know that, like, these words are kind of big, like harsh words. We get knocked out, but we get put under general anesthesia if we don't have anything in our system. Okay, now let's talk about an epidural. Now you actually have an epidural placed. It's running. It's dosed. And we have a uterine rupture. Guess what? Women of strength, more than likely, it still has to be dosed further, because an epidural is not like a spinal. It's just not, right? They have to dose it further. My first cesarean, I had an epidural. They had to come in, dose it to a deeper extreme so I wasn't feeling my surgery. And I had to wait, right? So we're still waiting. the same thing. There's always a wait, right? And it takes time. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes for any epidural to kick in deep enough. So Dr. McGuire, she wrote for Yale Medicine. She talks about this epidural and is it safe and how are they different? And she talks about how they truly are different than they were back in the day because they are dosing them lighter, right? We know that, we've seen that, but we still have some pretty serious risks as well with epidural, even though, again, they're smaller, like blood clots, spinal infections, spinal headaches, them not working, and then things like that, and blood pressure. And I'm going to say, as a doula, I've attended over 350 births. As a doula, I will say a large portion of any client, not just feedback, that receives an epidural has a blood pressure dip. And even when they have a large amount of fluids, because a lot of times they'll kind of cram fluids in to try to help this, but there's some sort of blood pressure dip and baby seems to struggle when that happens. And then it's like the cascade rolling over, move. Baby doesn't recover or mom doesn't, you know, blood pressure doesn't recover. And then we are off to an OR. And so one of the biggest questions, and I think it's a really hot debate in the medical world, is does an epidural raise your chances of a cesarean? Most people out there are going to say, no, it doesn't. The studies are pretty low, though. Like, I think in one study, there was like 2,000 people or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they showed it didn't. But I mean, from a doula standpoint, I know, like, I don't see as many births as these OBs, but I definitely see it have... Mm-hmm. You know, it seems to kind of do that, the blood pressure drop thing. So anyway, so is it safe? Yes. Do you have to go unmedicated if you have a VBAC? No. Do you have to get an epidural if you have a VBAC? No. Do what is best for you. What she says is those studies we know that have a higher concentration of epidural medicine was associated with an increased risk of cesarean. The lower concentration we now use actually promotes normal spontaneous vaginal delivery without assistance. So when she says assistance, a lot of the times when we have epidurals, we have like vacuum or forceps assistance because we have a lack of mobility, right? So that is what she is saying here. I will make sure to provide the link and some other links and our blog for epidurals so you can decide what is best for you. But for now, we're going to get into a story of an unmedicated vaginal birth.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Okay, Miss Haley, welcome Hello. To the show.
Thank you for having me. It's Absolutely. Really crazy to be on here sharing, so thank you.
We talk about that, how it's like crazy to be like full circle, right? Where you're like listening, yes. You're preparing, all the yes. people in your ear are like motivating you, and then here you are today sharing your story, motivating mm-hmm. others in your same space, you know, XYZ months ago.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. It really is like a full circle moment, like you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I'm so honored that you are here. I would love to turn the time over to you.
Sure. So yeah, I also love what you were saying really quick on the epidural and versus not. I, full transparency, when I went into this, I definitely recognized that, you know, epidural is a tool and I kind of knew and want to prepare myself. You know, if I'm obviously, you know, birth is not pleasant or, you know, it's not going to be like just like a walk in the park. But I knew, you know, there's a difference between being in pain versus suffering. And I really wanted to
yes.
know that for myself. And if it turned into that suffering, I would have, you know, tried, I wouldn't have been mm-hmm. opposed to helping my body to get, you know, my baby
to the next
but,
point.
Yeah. Yes. But there is a difference between, yeah, there being is. In pain and suffering.
As a doula, we talk yeah. about that a lot where we're like, okay, we are planning to go unmedicated. That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then we talk about like that pain versus suffering and that yeah. transition, because when we are suffering, we start having things that come up later. Mm-hmm. Like we don't think about like we're suffering now, but like postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum trauma, mm-hmm. we have these things that are not worth it. So in the end, like you have to do what's best for you and keep you mm-hmm. in that positive space and recognize pain versus suffering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I love that. But yes, I just started this whole story, I guess it's back in April of 2021, I had my daughter and she was breech. So for me, like I knew pretty early she was breech and she was so active. Like I knew that like, oh, you're trying to like flip in there. And I did all the things, you know, I did like spinning babies, I tried all the things, but it mm-hmm. was still COVID time. So I just didn't go to acupuncture. Or like, I feel like if it wasn't COVID-y time still, I would have maybe tried some more things. But that being said, I felt like she was literally trying to turn, because I'm like, what are you mm-hmm. doing? If you're not flipping, mm-hmm. like, I'm not sure what's that. Like, then you can't. Like, I just felt in my body, like, then there's a reason. So I didn't personally want to like try manually flipping her or things like that. So I just, to help with peace of mind, opted for a cesarean, even though that was like the last thing I wanted. I'm terrified of surgeries and needle. Like, I was like, I do not want this. This is the absolute last thing I want. But at the same time, I was happy that I could mentally prepare for that instead of it being sprung on me.
Right.
And so, and honestly, I feel like I had a pretty good recovery with that. At the same time, I knew like for any future children, I did not want to have another C-section. So fast forward, we moved across the country when she was about like 9 months old, and I was definitely not pregnant yet, but I was, you know, really thinking about expanding her family, and I had already started like researching providers in the area, joining Facebook pages, like the ICANN Facebook group in the area, like literally preparing, and I wasn't even like pregnant because I just really wanted to make this.
That is important.
Yeah. So I just did my research, really, really just wanted to be not in a situation where I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm pregnant and now I need to struggle to find a supportive mm-hmm. provider. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, it's hard to find VBAC supportive providers. And mm-hmm. I wish that wasn't the case, but I feel like that's unfortunately like the majority of the time.
The reality, it sucks. Like, it's stupid. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of mm-hmm. words for that. But it is the reality. It is more often that it's hard to find that true mm-hmm. support than it is to find the opposite.
Yep. Right? Like, I remember I went to you, so I made a couple of appointments just to like, you know, talk with like people to be like, hey, like, you know, how do you feel about this? Like, I'm looking for to establish care. And I remember I went to two different places. One was like an OB and they did have some midwives there, but yeah, I just felt very like, you're like, well, you can, or we can try that. And it was like, cool, this doesn't sound like 100%. And then I eventually found a group of midwives, which it felt like total like 180 with the way that the care just felt. And mm-hmm. not that you can't get that with OBs, but it just was like, they were like, yeah, you're going to do it. Yeah, we're going to do that. And it was like, cool, that. We're going to do that.
You're like, and great. I was almost not yeah. expecting you to say that. So
yeah, exactly. I'm like, perfect. So fast forward, I then get pregnant with my second, and I, you know, established care through them. And I feel like the whole process, yeah, was just so chill. And even just like anything, like I feel like maybe it's just the difference between, you know, first pregnancy and second pregnancy, where like everything is just, you're like so nervous about everything with the first, mm-hmm. but like even like my the ultrasound, it just felt very like with my first, they would just like really like make me feel like, they're like really making sure that, not that you shouldn't make sure things aren't like are okay, but like they just really made me feel like everything was so medical and like things could go wrong or something. And then with my second, they were just like, yeah, everything's great. And you're just kind of like, oh, cool. Perfect. But so that was awesome. And definitely not what I expected. And again, it's a different office, different state, but
right.
It was just a total different experience, which was amazing. But I was definitely in my head the whole pregnancy about I did not want this baby to flip. So I just kept doing everything I could throughout my whole pregnancy, really working on my mentality, my mindset. I found a doula. I went to a chiropractor towards the end of the pregnancy. I went to, pelvic health, physical therapy. Like, I did all the things, because I'm like, I want to do everything that I possibly can to make this happen. And that way, like, if it didn't, I would at least know, like, hey, I did everything and I totally prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And so mentally, that's just like what I needed. But I was definitely so in my head, like, what if the baby decides to be breech again? I would be so sad.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, that did not happen. But I also fell on my tail. I hurt my tailbone when I was like 4 months before delivery. So that was really not great either, because one thing that once I get into labor, I did not, like, I had so much tailbone pain, and that was just like something that I was not expecting.
Yeah.
But so anyway, the pregnancy definitely had ups and downs, and I feel like with, maybe you can answer if this is your experience too with multiple or down the line of pregnancies, but I feel like your body just feels everything so much quicker with like the second pregnancy. I'm like, oh, I'm already sore. Like, and it's like not even second trimester. Like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm.
But so I found really preparing, I think, is my number one tip of doing your research, listen to podcasts, really get in that space of, there was no doubt in my mind that like I wasn't going to be able to have a VBAC. And I feel like that really helped me out when labor came, because it wasn't something that I even thought about. And I didn't like psych myself out, or I didn't get worried.
Which, how amazing is that, right? Like, I feel like that goes, again, it's like the full circle of like, okay, I'm educated. I have the support. Mm-hmm. I have the body and the baby ready to do this. Like, when we have gaps in our circle where it's like, okay, well, I'm educated, so I feel confident in my ability. But then we have a provider kind of like wishy-washy, shut me down. Or I have a family member that's like, you're really making a bad choice, or start questioning us and placing doubt, you know, but then we're like, okay, we're confident in our body. We're healthy, all those things. But when there's gaps, we can't go into birth with that mentality. And that's something I wish for every single person going in to have a baby, no matter what. It's just feeling confident and having that mentality of stress free of like the doubt, right? Like, there's always like the what ifs and the wonders, and like every birth experience is different, but to not doubt ourselves or our ability. Mm. And it comes with education, support, all of those things, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like reading my books and reading and listening to stories, being like, yeah, like my body can do this. Mm-hmm. This is what people have done for, you know, all of time,
forever.
Right? Like, we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely I agree. If you don't have every single one of those aspects, it just makes things so much harder on yourself and everything. So fast forward, I never went through labor with my first. So I still like kind of felt like a first time mom, in the sense of, I'm like, oh, well, I know I'm in labor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's it going to feel like, right? And so the day, so February, it was February last year. So February, I don't know, whatever day it was, I guess 22nd. I guess I was having like cramping on and off, but like really mild. So I didn't really think about it. I was working, taking care of my little, my firstborn. And looking back, I'm like, oh, I guess it was maybe early labor, but I didn't think about it. And then I had pasta for dinner, which is hilarious. So I just like bring up pasta, because fast forward to, I'm putting my little one to bed at like 7 p.m., 7:15 p.m. And I start getting really bad like stomach pains. And I'm like, is this from my dinner? like, is my stomach just upset? Like, I don't know what's happening. So I remember I had to like have my husband finish putting her to bed, and I just was like really not feeling good. And I was like, okay, like, am I just not feeling good? Like, is this labor? Like, I'm not sure what's happening. So I get in the shower and I'm like, all right, let me just shower, like, see what's up. And then my husband like comes back in and I'm like, hey, like, I don't want to freak you out. Like, I'm not sure if this is labor or not, but like, maybe it is. So it's like, you know, getting probably closer to like 8 or so p.m. and things like are really kind of starting to ramp up. And I'm like, okay, this is probably labor. And I do remember having a thought of like, shoot, if this is how like early labor is and I'm already feeling it like this, like, I'm worried. Like, I'm like, I don't know that I can do this. Like, I had those thoughts. And I feel like I quickly kind of got out of that, but it like kind of freaked me out. And I wasn't prepared for that because I was just like, I know you can have those thoughts like down the line, you know, when you're like in active labor or whatnot, they say. But I was like, if I'm already feeling this and it's, who knows, you know, I doubt I'm in active labor yet, like, shoot, like I'm in trouble. Fast forward, we, like, contractions, we started timing them probably around like 8:30 or 9 at night. So only like an hour and a half or so after I first had that, like, you know, contraction that I felt. And they were already like lasting over a minute long and coming like 3 to 6 minutes apart. So it was, it got really intense, like really quick. So I was like, all right, we put on Harry Potter. I was like, let's just try to get some sleep. Like, let me rest here. Joke's on us. We did not rest. We did not get sleep. Ended up calling our, you know, midwives and our doula, and they were like, okay, you should probably like think about coming in. So we came in, so we left our house at like 11 something PM. We live like an hour from the hospital or like 40 minutes. So I was like freaking out. Cause, you know, one of the concerns is I feel like everyone's like, I don't want to have my baby in a car. But you don't want to get there too soon. So it was like one of those things. But, and I really truly believe though, for me, like people say, it's, you know, it's nice to labor at home because you're comfortable. And I do get that. But for me, I wanted to get to my place of birth. And I feel like that was a huge thing for me in my mindset of like, once I got to my place of birth and I was like, okay, this is where I'm giving birth. I don't need to travel. Like, I relaxed a lot. And so that was something I also didn't prepare, or like, then I assumed I would want to be at home longer. But for me, I was like, no, like, I need to feel like comfortable and in my space. However, when I got there, I was already 100% effaced, zero station, and 7 centimeters.
So
I was
already like, very far along. Pretty much labored at home well.
Exactly. So I was like, okay. But I just really wanted to get to that hospital. I was like, get me to my people because I need support. So we finally get to the room. They had a bathtub, which is great. So they filled the tub up. I did have an IV placed, which I like, they didn't have like hooked to anything, but I just had it placed. But what was annoying about that is they didn't, they forgot to tape it when I got in the tub. So of course it like fell out. So they had to like try, they literally, I think it's tried to stick me like 10 times. I'm not even exaggerating. Like, it was like a whole situation. So that was not fun. But yeah, laboring in the tub was great. And on the toilet was great. But it really, once I was there and I had my people, I just felt like I was in zone and everything just seemed a lot better than when I was at home, like in my head, just being like, what's happening? But yeah, so everything moved really quick, but I wasn't prepared for the tailbone pain. And the, I mean, I guess I probably should have, like, it kind of was in my head, like, this might be a thing because of when I fell, but man, the back pain and the tailbone pain. So I, even like things like the double hip squeeze that I thought would just be like, oh yeah, that's gonna help me. Like, no.
And sacrum, oof.
So just.
No wonder the toilet like, felt really good because you were able to sit and like without pressure, like reopen and release that.
Exactly. Or that was perfect. Or like hands and knees, like in the tub because I couldn't like sit. Like just, it was the whole thing. I don't remember like, honestly, from when it started, my labor started at home. I don't remember honestly getting any like peaking and getting any worse. It just honestly felt like the same, like intense kind of from the beginning all the way to the end, which was also something that I was not prepared for. And I think obviously it's different for everybody, but that was something I was like, oh, like pleasantly surprised in the sense of at least it wasn't like, shoot, I'm totally screwed later. But also like it was intense, like very quickly early on and throughout. But so fast forward, I feel like it's like now 7 a.m. So we get to the hospital at like basically 1 a.m. 7 a.m. I am at 10 centimeters and I feel like the urge to push. So we start pushing in different positions. And one thing I really wanted for myself was to not push, you know, like lounging on a bed. However, with my tailbone, I feel like everything hurt. And so it ended up where we like tried so many positions, but I ended up like kind of semi-reclined just because I feel like I needed that like support. I don't know. So allowing myself to be okay with like ultimately doing, like pushing in a position that I like quote unquote didn't want, and like being okay with that was something that I was like, you know what, like listen to what I need in this moment and do what's best. So that was one of those moments where I was like, all right, I need to just let go of what I was assuming and do what's best for me. And we pushed for, I think I pushed for like, pushed for a while, like I think it was like 60 or so minutes, which was...
That's actually not bad for a first time mom.
Really? I think it was like 60, maybe 70 or so. Yeah, I don't know. But I do remember the pushing, like pushing being harder than I thought. Like it was not something that I had prepared for. And I feel like for any mom that's out there listening, prepare for pushing.
Yeah. Pushing is hard work.
It's hard. I think that tired me out, honestly, more than, or like maybe like the labor is pushing. And I think it was half because I did not prepare as much for it. And because obviously it's the end of it, so you're already tired and exhausted. And but yeah, I did not prepare for pushing to last as long, even though I feel like I did know that, but like mentally I just was like, wait, this is like still happening.
Yeah.
And it being intense. But then he finally was born and I just literally grabbed him. And they were just like, and my husband like was helping catch him, but then I literally just like, I guess, took him like right away.
Oh, cute.
So it was great. But so then I had this like huge, like, you know, high of like, wow, I did the VBAC, like unmedicated, like this is great. And then fast forward to postpartum, the nurse had kind of mentioned, or, you know, my midwife had kind of mentioned like, oh, you have a slight like uterine prolapse. And I was just like, I don't know what that means, like, cool. And they kind of mentioned it as in the hospital. And then it wasn't until like afterwards that like I still was like, no one's telling me what any of this means. Like, what is this? I don't even know what this is. They're being so casual about it. And I wasn't like getting information. And so that was something that was frustrating. Because then postpartum, like, you know, a couple weeks in when I was like having, like starting to have some symptoms of prolapse, I was like, well, no one's giving me answers. Nobody told me what this is. And I'm just like now postpartum feeling like confused and kind of in the dark.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to go from this like high of like, wow, I had this amazing birth, successful VBAC, unmedicated, to now like kind of questioning like, well, what did I do? Like, did I, you know, you question yourself, like, did I do something wrong? Could I have done something differently? Why
did this happen?
Because no one else apparently has this, which is actually not true. Just not talked about. Like, so that was a part of postpartum that I was not at all prepared for.
Yeah. That's hard. But, and let's talk a little bit about some of that. Well, talk about the symptoms that you were receiving. What symptoms did you have?
So a few things. So at the beginning, I feel like, you know, I was like, I don't know what this means. Like, I'm not really feeling it. Like, you just said I had like a slight uterine prolapse. We'll check that later. And then, you know, you don't go to your visit until like
6 weeks
postpartum. Yeah. So I was like, okay. But then I would feel like when I'd be home, like a couple weeks later, like maybe 2 or so weeks, I was like, well, I'm feeling like heaviness, or I'm feeling like uncomfortable, or like pain a little bit. Like, this doesn't feel normal. And it made me like, or I like felt like bulging in the beginning. And I was like, that like emotionally like and mentally like really got to me. I was like, why is my body doing this?
Right.
And then I remember like messaging my like midwife on the little portal, and they were like, well, you know, we'll talk, and you're really early postpartum, like we'll talk when we see you. And like, no help. I'm like, well, that doesn't help me now when I'm not feeling great. That doesn't help me when I'm just like, you know, like, yeah, they're like, you know, most of the time it'll resolve or whatever. And it's like, okay, but like I'm not happy right now. Like, I'm not feeling great right now.
Right.
And so finally, like, since I did have my pelvic floor PT from before, I had emailed her and like, hey, is there anything you can recommend? Because, you know, I'm not seeing my midwife for a while. No one's really helped me out. And she was like, yeah, you know, you can come in. I can't do like, you know, an exam yet because you're still so early, but like, I can see you, I can talk to you, I can like kind of look at things and see like what's happening. And so that was really helpful. And what's interesting is now, you know, I'm however many months postpartum, But even I feel like a month or two or when I could go into my pelvic floor PT, she didn't see any sort of like uterine prolapse, but I think I have like a slight bladder cystocele. So I'm not sure like where the uterine thing happened at the beginning of my, like when I delivered, they had said I had a uterine prolapse, but now it looks like it's just a like slight cystocele. But what's frustrating about like what I've noticed with people with prolapse is like, A, the grades don't seemingly matter in the sense of you can be a grade one prolapse, which I think technically I probably am. But if you're having symptoms, like, then let's get that figured out. Because so many times people will be like, well, it's not bad, or I don't even see anything. Or it's like, okay, well, I'm feeling these symptoms and this is mentally like causing me like mental health, you know, it's making me in my head, it's making me depressed, it's making me upset about my body. So let's finding someone to actually like work on that with me instead of just dismissing that was huge because I don't have a grade four prolapse or grade three, you know, whatever it is that you consider bad. But if like it's making my day to day, you know, me not be able to do things, then that's a problem.
Yes. I love that you're talking about that. So women of strength, we, at least here in the US, we take way too long to be checked in on after having a baby. 6 weeks is boggling, mind-boggling to me. A lot happens in 6 weeks. We have a lot of hormone shifting. We have a lot of recovering. We have a lot of things that, you know, may need to be addressed earlier on or that can start helping us with our mental health. So there's so many things. So I agree. Like if you are experiencing any type of these symptoms and your heart is like, this isn't good or this is affecting me, like reach out to someone. Like if your OB or your midwife office is like, eh, we'll see you at 6 weeks, go to that PT, pelvic floor PT, like review with them. And so I want to talk about a couple of the symptoms of uterine specifically and what it is. So uterine prolapse occurs when the muscles and tissues in your pelvis are weakened, right? And we know that through childbirth, that happens. We push, and sometimes when we push longer hours or whatever, we can weaken that. But most people with uterine prolapse are a little older, like they're like 50 to like 80 years old, but it can happen in childbirth. So here are some of the symptoms: leaking of urine, inability to completely empty your bladder. So you go to the bathroom, you stand up and you're like, ooh, there's more, or you start leaking more, right? That heaviness down there where you're like, so I had a cystocele as well. So I remember, this sounds so weird, but I remember wanting to sit on the corner of the couch or on the edge of the couch just to like put some counter pressure. You know what I mean? And so that bulging, that lower back pain, which a lot of the times we're like, oh, back pain, we're nursing, we're recovering, we're hunched. Yeah, that's normal. Lower back pain is not necessarily normal. Aching or like aching or feeling that in like your lower abdomen or down in your pelvic area, and even constipation, severe constipation. And we know that after childbirth, especially if we have like an epidural or we've had a lot of like intervention and stuff like that, constipation can happen. So a lot of people get like iron supplements and stuff to have that be lessened. But these are symptoms that truly like need to be discussed and not ignored for 6 weeks, because like Haley was saying, it can start wearing on our mental health. Like I remember wanting to like go out and walk around the block with my kids and just wanting to like hold myself down there because it was so bulgy and achy, you know? So according to a study, it said that around 35% of women who have recently given birth suffer from prolapse. 35%. That's a lot of us, you guys. A lot of people. And the cystocele is when the wall between the bladder and the vaginal wall like weakens. And so things kind of like, we can't like kegel, we can't like, it's not tight, right? So it's weakened. So it kind of like comes down. And so again, if you are experiencing any of these symptoms, know that it's not necessarily something you have to just deal with. And yes, it will probably resolve in time, but you could also probably get some help sooner rather than later and help yourself mentally not worry about that. I have a friend who had a pretty high grade prolapse, and anyway, prolapse. And she ended up scheduling, which was totally fine. She ended up scheduling C-sections for the rest of her births because she was so terrified of having that issue because she did have water and fecal issues, right? Mm-hmm. And when you were peeing and pooping yourself, that's not fun. Like, it's not fun. But you can get the support out there, and you deserve the support, and you do not need to be pushed off for 6 weeks. So make sure to follow your heart and get the help that you need.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another thing that I would have loved to have known, like, I feel like no one talks about prolapse. Like, when I went through, you know, my pregnancy classes, or, you know, even just like with the doctor or my midwife, no one ever mentioned, like, oh, this could happen. This could be a complication. I don't love the word complication, but this could happen after birth. Like, no one ever mentioned that to me. So I was like, what is, I don't even know what this is. Like, and then I felt really alone. Like, yeah, why am I the only pregnant person or the only postpartum person who had this happen? But
in reality, I'm not talking about it. Yeah. And like, there's a ton of like risk factors, but giving birth is easily the highest risk. Think about the amount of pressure that we are putting on our pelvic floor and our organs, right? When we're pushing out a baby. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's another reason. And I know you did this. You went to PT, pelvic PT beforehand, but like, especially if you've had this in the past or you're thinking about this, talk to your pelvic floor PT and say, like, okay, can you give me some guidance on pushing? Can you, can we talk about how to try and avoid this? Because I had actually another client, my other one was just a friend. I wasn't her doula, but this was a client, and she had some pretty rough PT thing. They had to go through a lot of PT. And that was kind of her thing. And they said, as soon as you feel this, I want you to change positions. I want you to push differently. I want you to breathe differently. And she believes that her work through before and her work during and her different style of pushing helped. Baby came out really fast. She actually didn't have any pelvic issues, which was really a grateful thing for her because she had a pretty severe complication. So yeah, it doesn't always have to be that. So that was another message of like, if you have it, it doesn't have to be like that next time, or doesn't mean it's always going to be like that next time. But know that if you're having that, you're probably not the only one, right? 35% of us, like, that's a large chunk of people. Just, I mean, that's right up there with the cesarean rate, like quite high, right?
That's true. So
know that it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to open up. You do not have to deal with it. You can get help, and you deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I feel like for a while, I just, you know, like cry to my husband, and he's like, you need to, like, it's okay to feel this way. It doesn't mean, stop blaming yourself. That, like, really getting out of your head, and this, you didn't cause this. And yeah, you can absolutely, let's get help. If people are pushing you off, like, let's find somebody else then who will talk to you in the meantime, because your mental health matters.
Yes.
How you're feeling matters, because you know, now here I am, you know, getting close to a year postpartum, and I'm feeling so much better, but it's because I've been listening to my body, and I've been, you know, working with a PT and doing exercises and supporting myself and working on drinking water, not getting constipated. Like you said, like, all these things, which is that, again, were there times in my postpartum journey where I'm like, this is not what I want to be dealing with?
Yeah. Right.
But you can absolutely, like, it does get better. And I know when you're, if you're feeling this way, like, it sucks and you feel like it's never going to get better. And then I get it. I was there. But it really does. And you're not the only person. But at the same time, I don't want to scare people that, you know, this may not happen to you either.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
And if it does, listen to yourself and you can get help.
And that's the message, right? Like, it's not like going to happen to everybody, but it does happen. And it's not, it's important to know that you don't have to ignore it. You don't have to suffer in silence. You can get help and have a better postpartum. And I think, I mean, there's tons of things, like, I think I've talked about this, like, even in my postpartum journey where I was like, I got the birth I wanted, but I'm so frustrated. Like, I'm so frustrated that these things are happening.
Yeah.
And you can also have both those feelings. You can be like super happy for your birth, but also really frustrated with your postpartum journey, or vice versa, where you're like, I had a really crappy birth. But man, I'm so grateful for this postpartum journey, right?
Yeah.
You can have those feelings together. You don't have to be quiet because you had the birth that everyone knew you wanted.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It doesn't diminish how proud I am of having a natural VBAC and doing that, you know, even though at times in the beginning I did, you know, question that or really. But
and that's
no,
natural.
Looking back, I'm like, that's amazing. I am so proud of myself that I
yes.
achieved a VBAC and had an unmedicated one is just crazy to me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing your story today.
Thank you for having me. I know I can talk a lot, so.
It was wonderful.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.